Good morning, everyone. Louise is away today, but I am so genuinely pleased to be joined by what I would call an expert in happiness, Frank Bugala.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thanks, Tracy.
I'm sorry if I placed that huge expectation on you. You're an expert in happiness. But when I learned that today is the International Day of Happiness and then found out that Louise was otherwise committed to another event, it was just absolutely serendipitous that you came to mind. We met last week about a totally different topic. And I remember very clearly attending a seminar with Plan B and talking about happiness and how it plays into every aspect of our being. So I'm very glad to be having this conversation with you today.
Well, thank you. Yeah, happiness, that's what you're talking about is when we inaugurated our first community outreach, and we invited an economist from the University of Alberta, Edmonton, a guy named Mark Anielski, who became our mentor. Mm. Although we don't get to talk to him much because he's become so internationally famous,
yeah.
Which is the way of all great Canadians, they go elsewhere. Anyways, Mark wrote a book called The Economics of Happiness, and as a result of it, the country of Bhutan asked him to come and consult with them because they've got, of all things, a ministry of happiness.
Isn't that amazing?
Isn't it?
Doesn't every country need a ministry of happiness?
Oh, wouldn't it be fabulous if we had one?
Yeah. So maybe Bhutan will blaze a trail for the rest of the world.
And not only that, we didn't take it on in Canada, but China, now the next emerging world power as we know, has asked Mark to join them.
Wow.
So we don't know how to use our own abilities and our own creativity, but here he was, and he came to talk to us, and you were there at that inaugural event, and we were basically underscoring, you know, it comes down to here and now community, and
yeah.
That's where you find your happiness. You don't have to go internationally. Stay right home.
Yep.
In your own home and in your own heart and in your own soul, and that's where you'll find it.
Right. Can you actually just tell us a little bit about Plan B for anyone who doesn't know what that is?
Oh, yeah, sure. We came about as a result of what we considered a planning disaster on the delta of the Salmon River, because I was here 25 years ago to build a house for a friend of mine who retired here and got involved in the environmental action to save the river, which was community inspired. And then 10 years later, our community said, no, don't worry about it. We'll just place an entire housing development and a mall on it. So we then formed Water to say, look, you know, you can't take away what we've already done as a community in saving the salmon and stick a bunch of houses on top of what is a sponge that cleans the water
mm-hmm.
that we all drink, we all require. So we fought that battle. We won most of it, and the housing section never got built, and smart centers got only a third of what they asked for. But we realized that basically what people weren't getting was that they were realizing that environment and business are actually one. You know, you can't talk about one without the other. It's not like we're tree huggers. It's fact saying, hey, this is our community. We can have people, business, and the environment, which are the letters for Plan B,
mm-hmm.
and put it together. So after Water, we just said, we got to turn this thing around. So we joined with the college, and that's where it started.
Wow. So I'm just feeling like that laid a foundation for dialogue. Correct?
Absolutely.
And so now, do you see that there's been progress in how business, environment, and community all communicates as we think about planning for this city?
Oh, definitely. Oh. I mean, we're being reached forward with by various kinds of groups. We chose it basically to start out with the people part of it,
mm-hmm.
because absolutely it comes down to that. People and business, environment, it takes people to do it. So we've been following that avenue, and we've gotten into the volunteer community and drawing on that energy. But business has been talking to us all the way along.
Oh, good.
And a number of us who are talking to them directly are learning that they're listening, because they're understanding that the whole piece is the economy of Sam and Arm. We need all those pieces operating, integrated, talking to one another, listening to one another, understanding one another.
Yeah. And so how did the economics of happiness come into this?
Well, basically the book lays out what are the pieces that are needed to make that happen. He's Mark Anielski, an economist that very much is an economist from the point of view of doing stats and all the rest of it. But what he did was actually put out all of the statistical stuff that led to it. So he's got these unbelievable graphs, which are circular. And the graphs go from the center point, which is the heart of the solving, and from the outside, he has five characteristics of community. And in those five, he draws how each community, and it's been applied to various communities in Alberta, how each of them are successful in each of those areas, people, social, dialogue, business, and all the rest of it. And they come out looking like flowers. Ah. So you got to look at the book. I mean, it's just astounding what Mark did.
Yeah.
So that's basically how it ties in. So we took this and we went, okay, let's start looking at those pieces. And we're still looking. No one has done it yet, but I know it will be done eventually. An economist who focuses on the environment and starts looking at the cost and benefit analysis of when we save water, what it means to us down the road, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hasn't been done, but it's being attempted.
Well, I find there's a lot more information coming to me through the ArtsBC sites and things like that about scientific studies that show the effects of creativity on our day-to-day lives, on stress relief and our general sense of happiness. So I do feel like there's a lot more attention on the scientific proof of creativity and its correlation with happiness.
Exactly.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah, so
am I. Because I can prove my point now.
Yeah. Well, when you look at life, I mean, we understand that that's the basis biologically of this planet, is creation and recreation of itself, of its life. And that says it all.
Yeah.
What we're here to do is to live. And how do you want to live? Well, obviously, happy.
Yeah, obviously. Who could argue with that?
Well, exactly. And we don't do it for a lot of reasons.
Well, let's talk about that. Like, what are the roadblocks? Why don't we see this so clearly?
I think a lot of it has to do with the beginning of our human condition. And we feared. We feared what we were looking at because we didn't understand it. But now, after the centuries have gone by, we have got a lot more information that's showing us, what are you really afraid of? Yourself? Well, maybe, but that's all in your head.
Yeah.
There's nothing here to be afraid of, because if you look at it, planet Earth is truly the only heaven, if we can use that word, that we know of. This is the only living creature, that's the way I look at Gaia, at Earth, that recreates life and has as its energetic mandate to do that. We can scientifically think in fictional terms about what it might be somewhere else in the universe. But in fact, this is all we know.
Yeah.
So why not live it?
Yeah. Easy.
Yeah, easy.
So we're talking, okay, we could get really deep into psychological information here,
sure,
which I know nothing about, but you do. So what is it that is preventing us from that level of understanding? Like, what is it physically, physiologically, psychologically, that really keeps us in that place of fear and structure that maybe we're not comfortable with, but we don't seem capable of breaking out of?
I think it comes down to personally each of us facing, if you want to call it that, our demons on the one side of the psychological thing. But on the other side, if you look at all of the spiritual gurus over time, say it's as simple as letting go of fear and accepting, as Joseph Campbell said, accepting bliss, following your bliss, following your life's desires, your happiness is the experience, and that's the key. The experience of happiness that you've had in your life, if you go back to that, and it could be a childhood memory. And attach your moment right now to that experience and relive it, re-experience it. That's it. It's as simple as that. But we have been basically brainwashed from not doing that by a lack of leadership, basically, in that sense. Leadership that doesn't have the vision that we have had. And there have been visionaries on this planet that have come and gone. But those who are on the other side of the control argument say, don't believe that guy behind the curtains, because he's going to lead you down the wrong path. Well, the only path is yours. It's a personal, it's a subjective thing. And, you know, all of the religions that I've studied and was born into, that whole aspect, keep going back to that same thing, that it depends on you and your personal interpretation of your life. That's what counts. So take that and live it. And live it to the beauty and joy that exists within it. So it's there to be taken. So just do it. What's stopping you?
Well, I'm just going to be on the other side for a moment.
Sure.
What stops a lot of us is the structure that exists that puts us in a place where we have to do something, right?
Yeah.
We have to go to work. We have to make supper. We have to drive this car. We have to make our money. We have to pay the BC Hydro bill, right? Like there's lots of have to's that seem to clog up the path to finding our bliss. So how do we, kind of reconcile that? Like I know that there's ways, because I've had moments and I've had times, like weeks or months or, you know, times of my life where I felt like everything was very clear and I was choosing, you know, I was choosing a non, I wasn't letting anybody else structure my life for me. I was just saying, nope, I'm doing this because it makes me happy. Yes, I work hard at this, but because it makes me happy, right? Like I've had times in my life where I've been able to do that. Why is it that sometimes we just get bogged down with that all again and it actually stops us?
Habits.
Just habits.
Yeah. Habits are useful. And we know that. I mean, it's a good habit. There's a bad habit. We know that whole context. Mm-hmm. But habits also bring up something that's really important in that whole aspect, and that's the word awareness. Awareness is that place where, you know, you get that aha experience when you differentiate between, I know what that feels like, and then I know what the other thing feels like. And you compare them and you go, aha. It's as simple as that. When you have that aha and you go, I choose not to do that because it's in my way. I choose that better way, the easier way. And if you do that in an experiential moment, whatever it is that you're doing, however you're moving through it, physically, emotionally, spiritually, it doesn't make any difference. It's the same thing. Do it in awareness. Do it in the here and now. And you'll get there.
You have a wealth of knowledge in you about the economics of happiness, and Plan B has laid a foundation for how we as a community can help, help everybody be able to work together thoughtfully and authentically to create a space that we're all happy with, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So just before we went to break, you were talking about the awareness. Yeah, the moment-to-moment awareness of where we want to be.
Yeah.
And so that is, I think, one of the biggest challenges that we face. Canada is a Western country, and with our institutions that we all have in place, seems to be a challenge to be aware, right? Like on a moment-to-moment basis.
Yeah, exactly. And we're challenged all the time in our Canadian culture, especially living beside the elephant next door to us, afraid that it's going to roll over on this little mouse. it's definitely something that you have to work at. But I think we have an advantage over a lot of countries simply because we are beside the elephant.
Oh.
Yeah.
So how do you think that works?
Well, it works simply because it makes you very aware of what you've got to do and move on with it. And we've paid the price as a country, you know, to come together, to be able to come together. You know, if you look historically at what we did as a country coming together, I have this little story, if I'll just share with you quickly. As a young graduate from high school, I spent the summer at Old Fort York as guard and guide between that and architecture in the following year at U of T. And one of the interesting things that I learned at that time was the War of 1812 to 1814, which Fort York was part of, and got taken over by the Americans and so on. But the final coup of Canada over the U.S., which a lot of people don't know, and I used to do the guide duty as well, was to tell Americans that the final shot that was fired were British, Canadian, Indian troops burning the White House.
Oh.
People don't know that one. The Americans don't want to repeat it, but that was the final shot. We traveled all the way down the eastern coast of the U.S. and traveled up the rivers to Washington, D.C., and burnt down the White House. And why it's white is because they had to put so many layers of paint on it to cover it. Check it out.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
That is a genuine story.
That is a genuine story. Wow. And that was the final shot of the War of 1812-14. And that, in the end, said, don't you cross our borders again, Americans, because they thought, the Americans, that they had an opportunity because Britain was involved with France in the Napoleonic Wars. Oh, goody. We can take them too. Wrong.
Mm.
So here's Canadian culture. That's part of our background. That's part of what we have earned. So we take that. And now we come forward and we look over the border and see what's going on now. And we're saying, no, I think I'll keep what I've got. Thanks very much. And that's the origins of what I really call that notion of commonwealth. The Commonwealth of Canada, we belong to the Commonwealth of Nations. But I've always loved that from when I was a kid in school, realizing we are a commonwealth. And isn't that gorgeous?
Yeah.
You know, most of us forget that. And here we are, we have all that. So that's the doorway that we as Canadians have personally and as a culture and as a country to just take into ourselves and act on and be proud of it.
Yeah.
And if you bring that into yourself personally and take that and go in to your own experiences, tie them together, now you're talking a potential for happiness.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're changing lives right now.
Right
here.
Now. All the time.
Okay, well, taking it a little bit away from the individual and going outside into the scientific realm again.
Sure.
There seems to be a lot of measuring of happiness going on in the world.
Yeah.
And there's countries that are scoring higher in happiness than other countries. And it's interesting to see why. I'm sure you're very familiar with all of these.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I think we hear a lot. You know, Canada scores pretty high on overall, but we always hear about the Netherlands, right? Like they're the happiest people, Norway, yeah. Denmark. So I just wanted to talk about what it is, like some of those elements that make them happy, because it seems like a lot of countries have these things. So what is different about them, about these ones that make them so much more happy? So one of the things that in Denmark, they believe makes them among the happiest people on earth is that their basic needs are covered.
Yes.
So in addition to family and friends and opportunity and faith and environment and all the things that are, you know, you can say about a lot of countries, covering the basic needs, feeling cared for.
Yeah, exactly.
Is a pretty basic, like a comfort that makes us maybe more capable of being aware and following our bliss.
Absolutely. It's the social safety net.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that is very measurable.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And that is very much under control of governments and regulators.
And that's where we're lacking, I think, because we run into the problem when economics is misunderstood of thinking that it has to do with GNP and money.
Right.
We've cottoned on to something really interesting, And I think as a definition of economics, that Plan B, and I'll give you this one because it is classic. From about 1880, 1885, a guy named Alfred Marshall, who was one of the, you might call him almost the socialist economist, who wrote, "The study of economics is the study of human actions to provide the prerequisites," I love that word, "prerequisites of life, period. That's it. It's not about money. It's about everything that we do to get our needs met." Mm-hmm. And then you get into that whole wonderful thing where we're talking about happiness. What are your needs here in this life now to be happy?
Oh, wow, because that would change. That changes from individual to individual.
Absolutely. And that's where the onus then comes on each of us to grasp it and to begin to say, I can do this. I know what that sweet spot feels like when I was a kid and I was playing and I hit the ball out of the park and I didn't even think I could swing a bat, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. Whatever they are, whatever those experiences are, when we tap into those in awareness and bring them back into us and use them, now we're talking. That's life, that's happiness, and that's its creative potential in every moment.
Wow.
Yeah.
However, I still want to point out how integral it is that there is a structure within the country that supports basic needs.
Yes.
Housing, food, like food security, food accessibility, and food sovereignty. And of course, healthcare if you need it, but healthcare on a different, like without healthcare being the fixing of disease and illness, but instead healthcare being the focus on creating good health, right?
Absolutely.
Like those things are still under, a lot of structure, a lot of building and policy and laws and, you know, a couple hundred years of meddling.
Yeah.
So, you know, if those things I feel like can be affected by us, like if we can change those things in order to make it a little bit easier for people to actually be happy, then yeah, that would be power to me, right?
Yeah, exactly. Empowering mm-hmm. the individual. You know that there is a coefficient of well-being.
Yeah.
There is a society. If you check it out on the internet, just look up well-being. And there is a whole movement towards doing exactly what you're talking about. Rating well-being, not just by countries, but by communities, mm-hmm. individuals, and so on. It's a really nascent group in Canada, but I've been following them. We're sort of basically pseudo-members of them as Plan B, so we just are listening to what they're developing in terms of the scientific nature, the statistical nature of well-being as an evaluation process.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, still on the measuring, the indexes, I guess, emotional well-being is such an integral part of this. And I think that that's such a big nebulous area for us to tackle because, I mean, we're having enough trouble even understanding mental health as a, you know, as an important issue of our time. So how is measuring our emotional health and figuring out emotional factors, like how is it affecting all of this, our sense of happiness, our ability to attain happiness?
You know, I would think about it in terms of the scientific method because I've always loved that whole notion as an architect. We come from the idea that there is an overall, a general view of the issue, the problem that you're trying to solve. And within that circle of movement towards the center of the solution into the specific, there's this overview and interviews that are operating at the same time. I know what I want to get to, and here's all of this evidence around the outside of it. How do I get there? Well, it's the intent of bringing those together. If you just park it in the back of your mind, of your creative mind of life, you'll get there because you want to. But you've got to define, and this is where we're starting to understand it, like this coefficient of well-being, of the overview. But when you get down to the individual, it's drawing from the general to the specific, to the individual. That whole relationship. We got a long way to go to do that.
Definitely.
Scientifically. But we're trying to. And where the intent is clear, that being the intent, finding that relationship, we'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the right track. But each of us working on it on our own is generating the need for it. So we look at our own community here in Salmon Arm. It's calling on our leaders to say, hey, get us all involved in all the decision-making that happens. There's no stopping us now with the internet and any other way that we have. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And let's empower each individual to have a direct say in the process. There's happiness, because it's also about power of one's own life, the value that you feel that others have of your being here.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of it.
Yeah, and I think the being heard is
a
big missing piece of the pie right now, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of individuals feel very lost and drowned out in terms of, you know, how they're affecting their community. They just don't feel heard.
Yeah.
And you know, that's one thing about in the arts sector, we feel like is such a critical piece of that, is that when you express yourself in some form of art, whether it be writing or dance or painting or music or, you know, whatever your
theater.
Choice. Yeah. Theater, poetry, whatever, you're expressing yourself. And if there's somebody there to hear it, to see it, to understand it, to experience it, then you're being heard.
Absolutely.
That's such a critical part of who we are and feeling like we have value, right?
So absolutely.
Yeah. So you're talking about being heard on a big community level.
Yes.
And being able to affect change.
Yeah.
That's big.
Well, we can do it, though, if we start right here, right now, our community. We don't have to worry about the big thing. If we do it within ourselves and within our community, we got it.
Yeah, we got this. So we were just talking about measuring happiness, happiness indexes, things like that, or indices. Is that right?
Yeah, indices.
Yeah. And we mentioned Denmark, and I just wanted to briefly touch on a couple of the other places. Singapore is one of those places that is seeing a rise in their happiness index over the last few years.
Yeah.
A safe, clear path to success is
That's
one of the
done.
Things Yeah, that they've attributed to this rise in happiness.
And the interesting thing is where I've read that they are the richest per capita country on the planet. That's
so,
it. Per capita. The money is being distributed with the success of their technological abilities and how they're handling their environmental problems, how they're handling the food requirements that they have.
Yeah.
But they found a way, and I don't know because I haven't looked at it closely, they have found a way to distribute. Big deal.
So we're not talking about a 1% situation, 1% wealth in terms of wealth per capita. We're talking about actually
distributing the wealth, common wealth.
Yeah.
They're doing it.
Holy.
That's why they're the richest per capita country on the planet.
And I didn't even really realize how far they've come in the last 20 years.
Yeah, I know. They're so quiet about it. They just carry on doing it.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting, though, when you think about that? The ones that are making the most noise in life, you know, as a person, you know, and the ones who don't say much, well.
You're right.
They are.
Yeah, quietly going about
their happiness. Quietly going about getting it done.
Yeah. And the big noisiest countries in the world, of course, are, you know, having the biggest troubles, really.
Yeah.
They're upheaval and flux and polarizing. And, it's really a very difficult time for a lot of countries. And some are just quietly doing their own thing.
Yeah. And that's where we're going to learn our lessons, hopefully, you know, through the internet. I mean, there is such an upwelling of contact and information that is available to us now. And it's something that I want to see brought here to our town, Salmon Arm. I want to see us expand our ability to involve each other in dialogue all the time on all the issues. There's no need whatsoever to be hiding anything. In fact, we do a disservice to ourselves. And I often like to think about, here we are, Canadian lovers of our game of hockey, which takes a kind of thinking where a leader is the person who's carrying the pucks, but basically knows where everybody else is on the ice. Everybody is coordinating around who's got the puck and how they interface. Mm-hmm. Well, if you take that, we love this game. We know how to do it, yet we don't do it on a community level. I mean, how silly is that? We know how to do it.
Yeah.
But we're not doing it.
Huh. It's, yeah, we're not learning from our, from, you know, parallel situations. Yeah. We're not transferring that information.
Yeah. But they are in other places. So
yeah,
all I think we've got to do is take what we already know culturally and are basically talking about all the time in different formats and in different avenues, mm-hmm. and just put it together.
Yeah.
That's what Singapore is doing.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Something that caught my eye about what Singapore is doing that I thought related to us in Salmon Arm is one of the measuring factors is negative experiences per day. And
oh, yeah.
Singapore has one of the lowest, like the people reporting having negative experiences on a daily basis. So I'm thinking, Salmon Arm, we're so, like, we have like the highest safety level and we have, you know, all of these amazing environmental thing. I mean, how can we, it's really, it seems to me, that if that is a major measuring tool, negative, like the fewest negative experiences, we must be as a community super high ranking on the happiness index. Hardly anybody I know will come, you know, at the end of the day saying, man, I had a lot of crappy things happen today.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. We exist in a pretty mild, generally, you know, gentle, content in that kind of environment. So
yes, we do.
Hardly any opposition and, you know, there's so little crime. There's, I don't know. I just feel like, man, we are lucky.
Yeah, we have earned it though, too.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of work on it. A lot of people who have individually as volunteers in various groups and so on.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, you know, like I was talking to you earlier about my experience 25 years ago when I came here is that this community was restoring a river. Mm-hmm. I mean, I came here just to stay for a while, build a house for a friend of mine who was retiring here, and I just got totally involved in the environmental saving of the Salmon River.
Yeah.
And they watched it be turned around by a council that didn't understand the basis of what they had and actually attacked the very work that was done to save the Salmon River and bring the salmon back. It's here. We've earned it. We know how to do it. And it's turning around. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so hopeful about that. And seeing the young people coming up, you know, that they're attaching themselves to some of the movement of the young people in the U.S. who are saying that's enough of that kind of stuff with the gun situation. Mm-hmm. Our kids are creating stuff. There was a technical day at SAS just not too long ago that the college was involved in. Mm-hmm. I mean, I couldn't go there because it was just for technological reps and the students. But wow, would I ever wanted to see what they were up to.
Yeah.
So it's not just the elders. It's not just the working class groups of people in that group or the kids. It's all of us. Mm-hmm. It's all of us working at different things and finding that sweet spot of being community and being community effectively. Mm-hmm. So dialogue again. So.
Yeah. Oh, it always comes down to communication and community, and which ultimately our root is commune, right? To commune.
Let's watch that word, though.
Oh, I know, but it's it's only because of, you know, our weird historical institutions that, yeah. But the thing is I feel like, and of course, I've only lived in Salmon Arm for 16 years. So it's hardly any time. I'm basically a newcomer.
Right.
But I've seen huge changes in the relationship that the city has, this like the community within the city has with Nisqually and Adams River, Adams Lake and Little Shuswap and Splatchneen First Nations.
Right.
I've seen huge changes there. And that is a wealth of knowledge and understanding of of not only community and happiness, but of environment and food security and all of those things that we are just now beginning to say, wow, we need to learn from that.
Exactly.
And that's what makes me hopeful for this community, that we're starting to actually communicate and learn from each other.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a wellspring of information of thousands of years of culture placed in this place, because there is an energy that's connected to the people who live here, and that is still pervading this valley. It's really unique. I don't think the first settlers who came here from Europe did so by mistake. They could feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And this place also, for thousands of years, was chosen by the First Nations because of all of the things that it had for summer living, winter living, and all of the other things. It's the plethora of foods and the culture that they built around it. And I just want to touch on that for a moment, because this happens to be also part of my training, that I did part of the Lakota Sioux process of shamanism when I was back east, and learned an awful lot about the First Nations' mythological backgrounds. And one of the beauties of their animal totems was my learning about hummingbird. Hummingbird represents love and beauty and lives for it alone. So when you see a hummingbird, I mean, a truly unique animal on the planet. Nothing else moves like it. Mm. Nothing else is as tiny and moves as fast as it can, and so on and so on. But to think of it in those terms, there's your happiness model in one little tiny animal that does what it does, hummingbird, to live for joy and beauty, and that's it.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Makes me think about, this is a little bit of a downer, but
no.
Next year we have an exhibition coming up called Flight.
Oh,
it's
yes.
really about the decline of the songbird population.
Oh, yeah.
But that is, the hummingbird is a key that a lot of people want to focus on.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Sure.
So it means something to a lot of people.
Yeah.
For a lot of cultures.
Exactly.
And that's, yeah, we're very fortunate to have them in our area, but we're definitely seeing a decline. So that's interesting that it's kind of the, in First Nations culture, that it defines the moment, like living in the moment, the joy of the moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It does. Hmm. Yeah. And they take that and they apply it to the basic notion we were talking about before, awareness, because that's all you can do, is to live in the here and now.
Mm-hmm.
When you take, I've been an inveterate canoe tripper since I was 11 years old as a Boy Scout. And the thing of being out there in the wilderness, walking with a canoe on your shoulders, being attacked by mosquitoes, but whatever, is that moment-to-moment experience of the sounds around you, because you know you're surrounded by wild animals. You know that you're walking into areas that people haven't been in for a while or have not been in for hundreds of years. But it's that keenness of what happens to your senses. Your senses all just open.
Mm-hmm.
So you're listening, you're smelling, you're tasting, you're touching. All of that's happening, and that's awareness. And if you operate from that point of view the way the Aboriginal communities of this planet, some still do directly, and I'm thinking of South Africa, there's some stuff about that, that there's a happiness issue there that is amazing in terms of their hunting ability, is that they still need it. They operate from there because they have to. We've gotten away from it because we don't need to. Not so. We sure do.
Mm-hmm.
We need it more than ever as we distance ourselves from ourselves through the internet and through every device that we can come up with. Happiness starts to recede pretty fast because you're not connected. You're not connected to the life-giving energy of the planet. This is it. This is creativity. This is happiness.
Yeah. You know, one of the wonderful things that I've learned from Louis Thomas, who's been... he's an elder who's been pretty much involved with everything I've done at the gallery for the last few years. One of the stories that he's told me, that early settlers to the Salmon Arm area were very much interested in learning from the First Nations people and traded and were, you know, very cooperative and worked together and just wanted to be good neighbors.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't until the government, the churches got involved that it became not good.
Absolutely.
But there absolutely was a keenness and an interest and a, you know, a devotion to the land here.
Absolutely.
That they wanted to learn and be part of.
Well, look at who came here, though. And that tells you part of it. You didn't get an awful lot of rich people leaving Europe. You got a lot of people who were destitute.
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunity to expand into a new land and get away from the problems of European wars, which they've been going on for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
All of that brought a kind of person here who was ready and willing and able and open and had skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think about having lived just east in the Eagle River Valley. And the Finns who came there to begin with. What an amazing group of people. The tough guys, tough women.
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous the way they developed the country.
Hmm.
So they were ready to listen.
Yeah.
And we've gotten away from that.
Yeah.
But we can get back.
We can. It can work.
You bet.
And now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Well, dramatically and sadly, the planet lost Stephen Hawking this week. And that was, I don't know, that was a moment when I felt like, wow, if there was ever a time when we could understand how teeny weeny weeny we are in the universe and think instead about how we can be more expansive and inclusive and happy, then it would be this moment, right? In celebration of his life.
Yeah, he touched everything and brought it all together at the same time with that incredible brain of his.
Yeah. Can you imagine the moment of his death? I mean, even knowing what we know, because we don't know much about the process of death, but can you imagine the release that that mind felt?
Yeah.
Being released from his physical, you know, the tiny
the limitations,
little bag of skin and bones that he has been stuck in for 50 years, right?
Absolutely.
Must have just filled the universe double over again.
You can think of life as energy. You got to understand what he was touching. Like Einstein before him, they touched a sense of the energy of the universe that very, very few people ever get to experience, but they experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the piece. When you think about it that way, my God, what was it like to be inside that experience?
Yeah.
You know, it makes me think, too, of some of the spiritualists who say, you know, it's a good thing we don't know God's mind, the Creator's mind, because you couldn't handle it. It would blow your mind. Well, even someone like Stephen Hawking, that experience of their experience would have been, for many of us, impossible to handle.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So he was he was a happy guy.
Yeah, he was. He was very funny.
Yes. Oh, he was brilliant. Actually, that's been kind of some of the most fun is, have you seen like clips? Because there's all these memorial pieces coming out about him. Little clips from his appearances on everything from Big Bang Theory and Star Trek The Next Generation to The Simpsons and talk shows and phoning in. Did you see the one where he phoned in to a talk show with Conan O'Brien and Jim Carrey?
No, I didn't see that one.
The guy was just amazing. And he's just, you know, I mean, for a synthesized voice, his timing was bang on.
Yeah, that's that mind.
Yeah, exactly. So I just wanted to say a couple of things about what he said because, you know, he has quotes about being happy. And it's kind of amazing that when you are diagnosed with a disease that you're told that really any day you could die. Like you do have to live for the moment. So, you know, he recognized that his condition affected how he lived. So anyway, he does say that when he first was diagnosed, he became depressed and didn't see any point in working on his PhD because he didn't know how long, if he would ever finish it.
Yeah. What's the point?
Yeah, exactly. But he did. And then of course he fell in love. And he wanted to marry his college sweetheart, and it gave him a lift. It gave him the sort of a reason, like, if I'm going to get married, I got to have a job. And if I'm going to have a job, I better have a degree. So he just kept going and found that he, you know, enjoyed it more and more with each passing day. So he just wanted to point out with that, that where there's life, there's hope.
Sure.
And as long as you're alive, as long as you're still on this side of the earth, then just keep going, right? Yeah. Just keep trying.
And keep experiencing the way he did. Because with hope, we're talking about that energy that leads you to that next step.
Yeah.
Right? Where you don't stop, oh, this is awful where I am, and just go backwards or just stay stuck. But with hope, you just go, okay, that's that. Now what? So, you know, there's an open door there.
Yeah. And he also said, remember to look up at the stars, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like that was his thing. And not down at your feet.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that is living the best life that you can, right? Like, stop thinking about the minutiae of the details of the things you have to do. And instead, you know, recognize the awareness, like you've been talking about.
Yeah.
Recognize who we are, the miracle of us.
You know, that's actually a fun trick to do. To walk. You can do this, because one of the teachers, things that I've been working with for a long time is the whole aspect of awareness, using what we have visually, which we have a focus and we have a peripheral. So if you can start sensorily, take a walk at night where you're safe, look up at the stars, don't look at your feet.
Mm.
And experience it that way. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
I've taught people to do this in the daytime because it's a lot easier. But walk where you know. But wouldn't it be amazing just to walk without looking at your feet, looking at the stars, and pull it off without falling flat on your face?
Yeah. That would be amazing.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Can be.
Well, you know, if you practice it in the daytime, you know.
Yeah.
You're familiar with the terrain?
Yeah.
You could do
exactly.
It. Yeah.
And that's just going to just expand your awareness.
Yeah.
All your senses just open right up.
And I still feel like when we recognize how very tiny we are in the grand scheme of things, that some of those problems and, you know, roadblocks that we think we're facing, they just vanish.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All of the, which among my favorites, of course, are science fiction writers, play with that notion. And Isaac Asimov was one of my favorites in that respect. And he writes a lot about that idea of realizing the speck that you are and experience the energy in that speck. So they're both true in that we are specks. But we are energetic specks. And those energetic specks, like Hawkins, can do things and do things out of that awareness that generates creativity. And he did.
Oh, he definitely did.
Yeah.
It's just one more little quote. I'm happy if I've made a small contribution.
Oh.
I mean, a small contribution.
Yeah.
So his scientific findings, they don't really even compare, right? Like, I mean, Einstein, absolutely. But in terms of what he achieved and what he helped mankind achieve, it's off the scale.
Yeah,
and it is. And he found happiness in his contributions.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
And caught in that body and those physical limitations.
Yeah.
How his other senses just expanded, just what we were talking about a moment ago.
Yeah.
It just, everything else took over.
Yeah. He says, the fact that we humans, who are ourselves mere collections of fundamental particles of nature, have been able to come this close to an understanding of the laws governing us and our universe is a great triumph.
Yes.
Like, we've come huge strides in that understanding in his lifetime. And mostly because of his incredible work and his ability to communicate it to non-scientists.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There have been a few like that. I was thinking of the popular American Carl Sagan, who did all of that with understanding the star cosmology and the entire notion that, of star movement. But he did it in a humorous way. He was hilarious. Yeah. But there's a difference with what we're talking about right now in terms of the energy that Stephen Hawking produced in creating it. What did Einstein say in terms of energy? Neither created nor destroyed. It is just transmogrified. It's changed. It's transmuted. Mm-hmm. So we are continuously changing energy forms of one to another. But the universe is a ball of energy that we are part of. So let's get happy and be part of it. Be the speck, but be the speck knowing that you've got the energy to create. You're part of the creative process that is this planet's mandate to be. Because we're still creating new species, we're told, in science. We are eradicating the other ones faster than the ones that are being created, but it's still working.
Yeah, yeah. We're still creating.
Yeah, we are.
Every moment.
Always, always, always.
Yeah. So if you ever have this thought that I'm not a creative person, just remember, you can't help it.
You can't help it.
You're creating all the time.
That's right. Yeah. You were created. And the mandate is to create again.
Yeah. And there's also the phrase, create your own reality.
There you go.
So every day that you make a decision about the way you live your life, you're creating.
Absolutely.
So creativity comes in everywhere.
Every moment.
Yeah. And you're choosing that. Just like an artist will choose the color to lay down on the canvas.
That's it.
You choose the kind of life you create.
You've got it.
Yeah.
That's happiness. Mm-hmm. And the joy that comes with it when you've realized it and put it into action. That's the next step.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. Because you have to act on it.
Yeah.
At some point, you've got to take that happiness and, I can sit right here and enjoy this moment. Now what? Now what are you going to do with it?
Yeah, exactly.
And if you take it out to someone else, hey, George, I got this idea. Boom. Mm-hmm. And you're off and running.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've all done that. I think all of us have done that with some crazy idea we've had at some time or another. And we see the results, right?
Yeah.
We're rewarded with seeing that we created something special.
Absolutely.
And it's, sometimes it takes a lot of work. And sometimes you're tired at the end of that process.
Yeah.
And you think, I'm never going to do that again. But pretty soon, you just feel that energy welling up again.
Exactly.
And some of us can't help it. We just keep going from thing to thing to thing.
And next time that you do it, you'll have learned another way of doing it, which could be better.
Yeah.
Easier.
Yeah.
There is this idea in a lot of energetic activity, physical, of effortlessness, and that's part of happiness. To remember that at closer that you get to that sweet spot of doing something effortlessly, that's it. Now you're into something that is transferable, redoable, memorable, repeatable.
Nice. Okay, well, this has been fun.
Oh, no kidding.
That hour went by so fast.
Rap, rap, rap.
Yeah. But that's what we're all about here. We're all about
absolutely.
The conversation.
And creativity.
And that's what everybody should be doing, right? Like talking to each other,
creating
your space, creating these beautiful conversations, generating ideas. So thank you for that.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Yeah. And I just want to acknowledge our incredible sponsor for this exhibition.
What?
It's like an exhibition, an hour-long exhibition of sound.
Oh, got it.
Thank you again, Frank. This has been a real pleasure. And I want to say that, we think about this kind of thing all the time because in the art sector, the creative sector, we're always thinking about how to engage people who may not otherwise feel engaged with the creative community. And, we're just always looking for innovative ideas, innovative opportunities, I suppose, to create community. And this has been a great step in kind of helping me understand that process. So, yeah.
And can I do one little plug?
Sure. Quick plug.
It is, yes. April 19th, second annual volunteer dinner.
Ah, yes.
Just look at the website, www.plan-be.ca, and hook up to the Eventbrite connection to the dinner. It's free.
A free volunteer appreciation dinner.
Yep.
Perfect.
So
April 19th.
April 19th. All right. Saskia Rec Center starts 5 o'clock. We start feeding at 5:30.
Okay. Have a great week, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.